3, 2, 1. Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast.
With me, Mason Wazwaz.
And me, Kay Rhodes.
Woo!
Just a little bit of information for anybody that's in the area. Okay, so the Compensation Foundation is really pretty amazing. Anyhow, so they are collecting data from artists in the Bay Area to see how actually both nonprofit and commercial spaces and anywhere that you're showing are compensating the artists.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was just waiting for you to get to the end of the fucking sentence.
So they've been having these potlucks where people can go and fill out these surveys. And there's going to be one on February 10th at Real Time and Space in Oakland from 6 to 8 p.m. February 11th at Adobe Books, that's in San Francisco, from 7 to 9 p.m. And then February 17th at Intersection for the Arts, our old buddy, from 6 to 8 p.m. So head on over there. But if you can't make it to any of those, you can go to compensationfoundation.org and just fill out their survey online. And you can fill it out as many times as you've had shows. You can fill it out for every exhibition or event or whatever. If you're a performance artist or whatever, if you gave a lecture, all this stuff, they want to know about all of it. And then they're going to compile all that data. And then we're going to kind of have a picture of like how artists are getting compensated by, or if artists are getting compensated by any of these places. Mm-hmm. And they also measure like non-monetary compensation. So if you got hugs or you made connections or whatever, whatever, whatever.
I was on a grant panel this week, and we reviewed 24 grants from San Francisco. All the organizations were from San Francisco, and they were anywhere from like small organizations to mid-size organizations, which could be literally the budget was like $7,000, the full annual budget, to $700,000. So it's quite a range of money.
All applying for the same amount?
Well, it's a 50% of your, you can only, the max that you can apply for is up to 50%
of your own total
budget.
Well,
no, the max you can apply for is 15,000, but if 15,000 is more than 50% of your total budget, then you have to apply for the 50%.
Oh, okay.
But the majority of the grants are like well over $30,000. So there are only a few people who couldn't apply for the full amount.
Right.
But I was reading all these grants, I was so obsessed with like knowing whether or not these places were paying their artists, even just like minimally, or even part like some of their artists, maybe not all of their artists. It was really interesting to see.
Was there a way to know that?
Oh yeah, because I mean, we have in those grants, there's full detailed budget reports.
Wow.
Like for, you know, I think the past 3 years, it's like, you know, pages and pages of budget information.
Did that affect the way you voted on it?
No, because it's not a criteria, so you can't.
That sucks.
I mean, you can't, you know, take points off of some, you know, away from someone if it's not part of the criteria. So
right.
But it did sort of impact. It was something I kind of mentioned as I was reviewing. It's like they pay their artists, which I'm excited about. Or, you know, some people were like, we're trying to get to a point where we can pay our staff. Like they're trying to build their budget so they can actually pay their staff. Because
right.
A lot of them are, you know, the staff are volunteer still, which is intense.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like we should just get all the nonprofits together and make one super nonprofit?
No.
And like buy an old mall and everyone could still have their own space.
So it'd be one nonprofit with multiple nonprofits with different, representing different ideas and different parts of the community through their own programming.
Uh-huh, but in one centralized location. I feel like that's kind of what the Omni Commons
I know,
is doing.
That's what I was thinking. I think maybe if there were multiple locations, I'd be into that. But just like one, I feel like art needs to be more widespread than one location. Like I want to think of it as like, oh, there's art galleries and institutions and organizations in this neighborhood, and there's some there and there's some there, sort of representing sort of within the communities they're representing, and so to have just one strip mall of galleries seems kind of like, well, that might be work for something, but it's not going to be the answer to everyone.
Also, it's so exciting when new places are starting. But what if we don't have any more new places and everybody that wants to start a place just goes and devotes that time and energy and money to a place that already exists?
I can't tell if you're asking that from like a wouldn't that be, isn't that a good idea?
Or I'm just wondering.
I think there's plenty, I feel like there's actually plenty of new initiatives being started all the time, whether or not they're, you know.
No, I'm saying what if there are no more new ones? Let's do no more new ones. This is a thought.
Okay, this is like this is a scenario. You're giving me a scenario.
Okay, not that I've actually thought about it before this moment, but just a thought. What if next time Jimmy Jenkins wants to start a gallery under his bed that's open one
that
hour a
terrifying.
Month, you know, and gets an alternative exposure grant and right. yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
What if Jimmy John Jenkins?
His name is Jimmy Jenkins. Let's just keep
goes
that straight.
Instead to one that already exists and it's like, hey, I was thinking about devoting like 90 hours of my life.
Keep going. Finish your fucking thought.
To making my own underbed gallery. To making my own underbed gallery. But
that could be the name
what
of the
if instead I just come and help you with yours that has already been established?
But Jimmy Jenkins has an idea for a gallery where he might be able to support other artists. So what happens with those ideas? He just sort of puts them aside. Do you think the gallerist he approaches wants to incorporate his ideas? Maybe they're kind of creeped out by the underbed gallery idea.
So no, then.
I mean, I'm not going to say no.
I just feel like
you want Jimmy Jenkins to have his piece too. No, you want him to like put it away for
what?
A little while.
No, I just think that we have so many tiny spaces that are open like from 4 to 4:30 on Wednesday.
That was
afternoon.
Christine's concern. Yeah, she's like, the only problem is that there's all these amazing spaces, but they're
what
you
if
can't
we
get to them ever.
Kind of teamed up a little more, and instead of every single person having their own gallery,
yeah,
we have like more support
for
the ones
already.
I think
that could make sense. In, for example, in Oakland, there's neighborhoods where there's multiple little event sort
I
of
mean,
exhibition
I don't
spaces.
End any ones that are already in existence. I'm just talking to those people
the
out
future.
There.
If you're thinking about starting a gallery in Oakland, maybe
under your bed, inside your mailbox.
Maybe you should go to the doctor first.
That's real, dude. I remember.
Under your bed is not real. I mean, it's a real space.
I'm just going to get right back up on my soapbox.
Go ahead. Get on the
never rant. Come down from. And everybody wants to start their own thing. Nobody, everybody wants to be the president and the leader and the blah, blah, blah of their own thing that they invent. Nobody wants to just help something else. That's all. Says the person who likes to, you know, only does shit by myself.
But I hate to think of like, I don't know, part of me just wants to go ahead and support any creative endeavor at all. I'm like, I feel like those are all being kind of smashed to the ground. I'm sort of like, great, start your fucking gallery under the bed. Why not?
Well, just, you know, on the record, I would totally go to somebody's underbed gallery.
I'm not sure if I would. I definitely would need a person to go with.
May soon, I'm going to do that.
Try it out. You
it's
guys,
kind of
you
funny.
Had a gallery, the Archipenko?
Oh, yeah, Archipenko. Gallery Archipenko. We had a one show in our
that
apartment
I missed.
Gallery. It was a good show. I liked
sure.
it. We had fun. That was fucking hard work. That's the other thing. All this shit is hard fucking work.
What was hard about it?
Like, we didn't have any lighting, and we couldn't screw into our ceiling because we have asbestos. And so we had to like create this bizarre, like we made almost like gallows looking things with clip lights on the end to light the work, you know, and inviting everyone. And, you know, we had to have food and we had to have all this stuff. And the install was kind of intense. We had to build shelves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then like keeping everything nice for when, you know, in a place that you're living in.
Yeah. You're like, oh, God.
With two slobs living there. So I don't know. It
actually
is really
now five with all the animals.
Yeah. God. And it just is I have a lot of respect for people that are doing this shit because it just is running on pure elbow grease and,
mm-hmm.
you know, passion.
Yeah.
Everybody do what you need to do. It's all good.
There was one project that was, I think it was like a bathroom project.
When I was in undergrad, I had a professor who did a bathroom installation where she covered all the walls in flesh-colored vinyl and then painted little like
pimples?
Nice little illustrations of bound penises.
Oh my God. Amazing.
We're here at Interface Gallery in Temescal Alley in Oakland, California, talking to Christine Wong Yap. Here at your show, Make Things Happen. But the thing is in, the things is in parentheses.
Actually, the happen is it?
Shit.
So you can make things or make things happen. And so there's 45 artists who have created activity sheets. And the make things ones can be like hands-on activities, like drawing activities. And then there's make things happen, which is more like conceptual or performative or even like political activities.
Can you give us a few examples of those activities to sort of...
Sure. Kevin B. Chen, who I think a lot of you guys know as an artist and curator, he has an activity where he has a series of landscape horizons where you can fill in kind of like the very miniature buildings that he draws. Another one I really like is Pavel Romanico's paper craft activity. It's you can make your own miniature version of the Joseph Kosuth three chairs thing. So there's, yeah, so you can cut out like a little chair and fold it and make it stand up. And then there's a little drawing area to draw a picture of the chair and then a little area to make the definition. And then, so those are kind of like the more hands-on activities. Then there's more political ones. I think like Mail Order Brides is really interesting. They offer a page out of their, I can't say it. It's like Mananang Google. There's so That's many right. syllables. Oh, yeah, Mananang Google. Yeah.
I think it's Mananang Google.
Oh, yeah, there's one more syllable, right? Mananang Google corporate handbook. So they offer like four different power positions, and two are power positions for women that are very strong. And then there's two for men. Like one is like how to like kind of shrink and like take up less space. I also really like Brian Z. Gears. He's a Brooklyn-based artist, and he has this kind of like psychological-themed one where you can actually cut out this mask, and then over the ears, there's kind of two texts, and then you put the mask over your face so you kind of can't see anything, and then people, you get people to whisper into your ears these things, and it's kind of like a psychological experiment. It's really cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of psychology, mm-hmm. I read that you're very into positive psychology.
That's true. I've, for the past few years, been doing projects in, like, around, I kind of started out interested in optimism and pessimism, and I started looking into positive psychology, which is, it sounds like popular psychology, but it's different. It's like an emerging field within psychology, where scientists do empirical research to study what people do to, like, maintain or improve their subjective well-being.
Kind of like coming at it instead of, like, trying to deal with worst-case scenario, like, figuring out what's, you know, can make best-case scenario.
Exactly. I mean, there's so much science looking at, like, illness and pathologies and stuff, and then kind of just trying to balance it out so that we know more about, like, finding meaning, purpose, or like relationships and all these different things.
What has the feedback been around this series of projects you've been doing around positive psychology?
I mean, I think it's been pretty well. I think people who are interested in happiness or people who, for example, I've been showing quite a bit with Susan O'Malley and Leah Rosenberg. So I think when people are interested in works that are kind of engaging in a way to get people to reflect about their emotions. I think when people aren't afraid of sentiment, it's been very positive. Mm-hmm. I also, sometimes I have noticed, like, I think, I mean, this is just my own perception. I'm not sure how much people actually think this, but I do think, like, in contemporary art, people associate criticality with opposition. And when things are affirmative, it makes them a little bit more nervous or something. People in contemporary art are used to taking ironic or cynical positions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes some of my work that is more just like wholeheartedly exuberant, they're like, oh, she must be being ironic or sarcastic.
Because you're from the Bay Area. Has there been a big difference between making and showing this work over here as opposed to New York?
Well,
because now you live in New York.
Yeah.
For listeners that don't know that.
Yeah. Let's see, I've been in New York 4 years. I think there has been, I have been showing in New York a little bit, but I think maybe I've been showing more of this work in the Bay Area, it seems like. Like, I was in residence at Montalvo where I showed a bunch of this work. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I do feel like I'm still, like, finding my way in terms of where I'm showing and who I'm working with in New York a little bit still.
Wasn't this, I was reading on your website, the Make Things Happen project, did that initiate in New York in the Social Practice, the Art of Collaboration show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About that show?
Sure. So the show is Social in Practice, the Art of Collaboration. It was curated by Hank Willis Thomas and Deb Willis. And it was shown at the Nathan Cummings Foundation and at NYU's Tisch DPI, their digital photo imaging department. So this is funny because they're photographers, right, and they invited a lot of photographers to contribute. And they invited me, and I don't have that much photo-based work. I do. I have a little bit. But, you know, in thinking about collaboration, and I think I kind of had the beginnings of this idea a little bit, and I was just like, I'm just going to go for it and show a bunch of photocopies. Mm-hmm. So I think the response was really positive. Like, it was like kind of like, it's kind of a weirdo in that show, but I think it kind of worked for me. Like, I'm totally happy with it. And then Suzanne here at Interface invited me to just do this project here. And I'm so glad because I feel like I was able to expand it because it was originally 29 artists and now it's 45. And then also have, like, interactive workstations, like, have a table with some art supplies and also have a space for people to make their own activity sheets. And there's a little printer here where you can, like, make copies and leave, like, make your own brand new activity sheets and leave copies for other people to do. And then we also have 4 offsite projects. Yeah, so Suzanne worked with some neighbors. So, for example, Hannah Jickling and Helen Reed have an activity called Mystic Pizza, and it's kind of a divination exercise where you look at, like, where the pizza crusts fall on, like, your cardboard. And then that kind of, like, tells you something about yourself. So that one's at Lane Splitter Pizza, which is really fun. And then there's been 2 events. Last night, Lauren Marie Taylor came to the opening, and she did a bunch of, like, astrology readings, and you can, like, make your own constellation. And then name a star, and she'll, like, register for you. And then today we're having Lexa Walsh do a meal ticket activity where there will be some food and some exchanging of recipes. And
on an unrelated note, I don't think we've had a lot of mural artists on the show, and I just read this essay about ethical muraling, and I just was wondering if you had any takes on that, like the ethics of murals and community work and activism and stuff like that.
Yeah, this was a really, really long time ago. I would say like maybe like 98 and 2000. I was it was actually on 40th Street, not far from here, when I stumbled into, like, the East Bay Institute for Urban Arts, which is run by Matt Schwartzman and Juan Alicia. So she's a muralist, and I kind of apprenticed under her and did a bunch of, like, community-based education. And they have a very strong model of using popular education and studying, like, Paulo Freire and, like, just making the models originate out of, like, research in the community. Mm-hmm. So it's really, like, doing a lot of research and then helping people or facilitating people to, like, figure out what they want to say. Yeah, I don't know if I mean, in the cases where I just designed and painted it, those were often, like, specific for, like critical resistance or something, where there's a specific, they wanted me to do something, and I kind of had something in mind for them that worked out well for them. And those often were, like, on banners that could be, like, brought around to different places.
That's awesome. Do you have any advice for artists that are thinking about getting into muraling?
I mean, I think there's amazing resources like Precita Eyes and, like, in the Women's Building, with the history of all those murals in the Bay Area, there's tons of resources in terms of, like, looking into kind of learning, like, the pedagogy and like, methodologies of, like, that kind of education, I mean, community-based work. Mm-hmm. Matt eventually did publish a book called Beginner's Guide to Community-Based Arts, and that's got a lot of really interesting case studies from organizations around the country, including, like, the Philadelphia Mural Arts Program, which is very community-based.
So let's get down to it. What do you think, Bay Area versus New York?
For me, the fact that I can work in the arts in New York a lot easier is really nice.
And is that because there's just so much more going on? There's so many more galleries, there's so many more museums. There's just
Yeah, exactly.
Just larger.
Yeah. But then, of course, like the big squeeze factor in New York is like the real estate. And I know real estate is crazy here. But I don't know, because it's also like I haven't been here for 4 years, so I haven't had to like search for an apartment or a studio in the past 4 years, and I'm sure it's a lot more competitive and crazy. But in New York, it's really crazy. Like, I rented a studio in Long Island City maybe like 4 years ago, and it was pretty easy to find a space. And then even now, it's like my last year I did a show, and it was so hard to find a space. And I had like, you know, $700 from a grant that I could spend per month on a space, and I couldn't find a space in Long Island City, like not super dense like somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, Long Island City is the thing now, you know. And I feel like maybe like the changeover in seeing like artists move into a neighborhood and then a neighborhood change really quickly with new development attracting like a totally different class of people, that does feel like very dramatic. And I think I read something where like in North Williamsburg, like a certain percentage of houses of units that are sold are paid for in cash. You know, I wrote a thing for Art Practical like in 2011, and I kind of like interviewed some artists, and you know, I feel like a lot of the stuff is still the same about the Bay Area, like super strong in alternative art spaces. And I actually don't think there's that many super interesting alternative art spaces in New York. Like, I think one of the things that's interesting about New York is all the public art programs, mm-hmm. like Public Art Fund, Creative Time, and even No Longer Empty does really cool shows. But I, like, when I think of really exciting spaces, I tend to think of like Southern Exposure, you know, and like spaces like that. And I love coming back to the Bay Area and hearing about things that aren't done by people I know, because that means there's more artists that I don't know, and there's a lot more room for growth. So all these new spaces that are popping up, that's really exciting. I will say, though, as a visitor, and especially someone staying in the West Bay, like trying to visit these East Bay spaces where they're only open like for 4 hours a week, that is a little bit frustrating. And I get like people have jobs and like it's really tough, and you know, but I feel like like, for example, in Brooklyn, where there's collectives like Tiger Strikes Asteroid, or even I'm part of a collective called Ortega y Gasset, we try to have a little bit more hours than that. Yeah. But I think in our last show, we had probably like Saturdays, Sundays.
The alternative spaces need to tap into the same retiree population that the big museums have for their docents and whatnot. Oh. If you need a gallery sitter, if you just need somebody to go show up, open the door, and sit there, you got to get these like old people in there.
They gotta be pretty out there old people. Yeah. I'm sure there are some.
I feel like you could get them on board with anything.
No, because I feel like half the reason why those docents are at the museums is because they get to go talk about like Picasso and Matisse.
Do you have any thoughts on how we could achieve this goal?
I do not. I'm sorry.
So you turned down the Facebook residency. I think that might have been, I don't know where I heard that from, but that might have been one of the first times I heard about you.
I think Christian wrote about residencies at like tech places or something.
That's Christian Frock.
Christian Frock, yeah. And then she interviewed me briefly on the phone. And I guess she had asked Drew Bennett, who runs a Facebook residency, had anyone turned down your offer before? And he said one person. And then Christian somehow intuited that it was me. I mean, I'm friends with Christian, so she knows. And then she asked me about it, and I was like, yeah. And then she's like, that's a lot of money. And I was like, I don't want to know. And then I read it in the article, and I was like, wow, I'm glad I didn't know, because it would have been tempting. But then I'm like, it's even worse to know and not want to do it and then do it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, why? What were your reasons?
You know, it was like maybe like a year or two ago, and everybody in the Bay Area was pissed off at Google buses, and I was very
as people still are.
Yeah. Well, I think like in the air, it was like very much like a sense of loss and grieving about a Bay Area that would never come back. You know, a San Francisco that we're losing, and I was just very sympathetic, and my main feeling was like, I don't know, I was talking a lot to, like, Val Britton, and, like, we were talking about, like, Riot Girl, and, like, you know, like, in the 90s, like, this period where we came of age, it was more, like, the norm to feel, like, an anti-corporate ethos. Yeah. And then just wondering, like, where that sensibility has gone. I think in the end, I felt like if there's going to be any regrets, I'd rather have it be, like, not about anything ethical.
Thank you so much, Christine. It's always so good to see you and talk to you. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, guys. Here's the deal. I don't know if you know this, but we have the show up on Mondays. And we're thinking about switching that up, and instead of putting it up on Monday, putting it up on Wednesday morning. If this is going to ruin your life, listener,
let us know.
Please tell us, and maybe we won't do it then. But probably we will.
We're trying to make Kate's life a little bit more manageable.
Because we record the show on Sunday, and then it goes up Monday morning. So that gives not a lot of time to edit. So I think this is going to A, increase the quality of the show. B, increase my quality of living. 3, you will enjoy it more.
Because Wednesday, it'll get you through your hump day.
Hump day, that's why. Woo! I just touched Mason's foot. So if this is going to ruin everything, just let us know. Call in 419-351-6606. Bird Network name is at Pine Tree Podcast. Also, everybody, on February 25th, there is an adjunct walkout. This was, like, proposed in October at actually San Jose State University. By an anonymous, I guess, adjunct professor.
Mm-hmm. Sure, so, they don't want to get fired.
Yeah. I think some unions are saying don't do it because it's not part of the contract. Let us know. Are you doing it? Adjuncts are getting fucked. I mean, I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you know how fucked up it is for adjuncts.
I know we have a lot of adjuncts listening.
I think it's fucking insanity how much more work adjunct professors do than tenure professors, at least in art departments.
Yeah, those are the departments we're more aware of. I think, well, I don't know about in all the other departments, but yeah.
And how little, and the fucking pay difference. Like,
do you think
if you're,
that's true, though, or is that school by school? I think maybe there's some schools are worse than others.
What, how they're treated?
Not necessarily how they're treated, but...
But how much work they put in?
Yeah.
I just feel like, what is the difference? I mean, I feel like adjuncts usually teach lower level classes, and I think that's way fucking harder.
But I feel like I know a lot of the teachers, the faculty at Berkeley, and they're all pretty fucking solid and invested in their classes and in their own practice and engaging with the students. So part of me thinks like those faculty, and this is a blanket statement, I could definitely be wrong, are pulling a lot of their weight. They're not just putting it all on the adjunct.
But are they pulling 10 times more weight than adjuncts?
Right. That's a good point.
Because that's the pay difference.
Probably not, because I don't know if anyone can fucking do that. Yeah, I was talking to an adjunct this week, and we were talking about, you know, artists getting paid and in general about payment and the wealth disparity in the Bay Area and how it keeps sort of, that gap keeps growing. And she was telling me she's an adjunct, and she gets $20,000 a year.
Yeah, that's below the poverty line.
I mean, I was like, I think I almost cried. I was so upset to hear of that. I mean,
yeah, and if you're trying to make more than that being an adjunct, disgusting. You're fucking driving all over hell and creation to go to like 30,000 different schools. You're making up all your own curricula and lesson plans and shit. You know, you're doing a lot of work outside of just the time that you're teaching.
And then I know other adjuncts who are like, they're teaching a couple classes or one class a week, but then they're also like, oh, I'm going to be an Uber driver.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
oh, yeah.
These are people who have MFAs and PhDs who are so invested in that community, in education.
And are doing so basically depressing. The same job as a tenured professor who gets paid like $60,000 to $100,000. A year. I'm not saying it's the tenure track professor's problem because they used to be an adjunct.
Right. They know all about it.
Yeah. So
I'm sure you listeners have a lot to say about this.
Yeah.
Feel free to call in. Let us know what you're thinking.
Please do. 419-351-6606. Congratulations. You listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. That scared a cat. So remember, the next episode is coming up on a Monday. But the next episode will be up on a Wednesday, and that will be Wednesday, February 18th.